Support for WAMC comes from the Green Toad Bookstore, Oneonta's independent bookseller with current fiction, nonfiction, young adult, and children's books, greentoadbookstore.com. The Henyon Bakery in Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. Dr. Theta Patterson and Associates, a medical practice specializing in dermatology and dermatologic surgery. Serving the Capital Region and surrounding areas since 1995 when it comes to skin, this practice is in THETAPatterson.com. This is a WAMC News Update. I'm Brian Shields. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he urged the firing of former FBI Director James Comey because of Comey's handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation. Sessions says he gave President Trump his opinion on Comey at Trump's request. But under questioning today, Sessions refused to say whether he also discussed with Trump Comey's involvement in the Russia investigation. Sessions, testifying today before the Senate Judiciary Committee, said he won't disclose his private conversations with the president, citing longstanding Justice Department policy. The first openly gay member of New York State's highest court has been sworn in. Judge Paul Fineman took his place on the Court of Appeals following a ceremony this morning in Albany. Fineman has been a judge for more than 20 years. He fills the vacancy created by the death of Judge Sheila Abdusalam, who was found dead in the Hudson River near her Manhattan home in April. Governor Cuomo nominated Fineman, called him a trailblazer whose career has been dedicated to the causes of justice and fairness. Boston is competing against big tech hubs across the U.S. and Canada as it makes a bid to land Amazon's new headquarters. Numerous Massachusetts cities are submitting their own pitches to Amazon. All are using proximity to Boston's tech talent as a major draw. Massachusetts Republican Governor Charlie Baker says the formal bid by the state will include a compendium of local pitches. Independent private schools in Vermont say they have a plan to accept more special education students. A new draft plan released by the Vermont Independent Schools Association says a student's home school district should pay for all of the costs associated with special ed. The State Board of Education in Vermont said last year it was going to require independent schools to accept all special education students, which led to a debate between the state and private schools over paying for the cost. Officials in Connecticut have launched an investigation into allegations of market power abuse by two of the state's largest energy providers. The Office of Consumer Counsel says the investigation began after university researchers claimed that Eversource and Avangrid intentionally created natural gas shortages so they could drive up energy prices. The Public Utilities Regulatory Authority is expected to call for a hearing in the next few weeks. Stocks opened higher as healthcare companies and banks rose, putting the indices on track for more records. The Dow is up 142 points, 23,140. The S&P up a point, 2561. The NASDAQ up a point, 6,624. The weather forecast, a sunny afternoon, mid-60s to near 70. Clear and cool tonight, upper 30s to mid-40s. Some areas of fog tomorrow morning, otherwise a sunny day, mid-60s to low 70s with a bit of a breeze. Sunny at Burlington, 57. Clear at Pittsfield, 55. Woodstock, 64. Albany, sunny, 59 degrees. You're listening to Midday Magazine on WAMC. Governor Cuomo this week signed legislation to help increase organ donations. Sponsored by a Hudson Valley senator, the law is named for a Rockland County resident who received a heart transplant. Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn reports.
Lauren's law is now permanent. Lauren is Lauren Shields, a Stony Point resident who underwent a heart transplant when she was 8. The high school senior is now 17.
You know, speaking firsthand and from a personal experience, you know, transplantation does work and it saves lives. And I wouldn't be here today if I didn't have my heart transplant and I wasn't given a second chance at life. And if it weren't for someone who took the extra step to sign up to become an organ donor, I wouldn't be here.
State Senator David Carlucci, an independent Democrat, sponsored the bill that removes expiration language.
By having Lauren's Law permanent, what it does is when you go to the DMV, you're asked the question, would you like to be an organ donor? Yes, or skip the question. It's something that you have to decide when you're getting your driver's license, when you're getting your driver ID or non-driver ID. So this is going to make a big difference. It's really building upon the successes that we've had over the past few years.
The bill first passed in 2012. Carlucci says some 10,000 New Yorkers are waiting for transplants. In fact, according to Live On New York, the state ranks last in the percentage of residents registered as organ donors. Brooklyn Democrat Felix Ortiz sponsored the bill in the Assembly, and Democratic Assemblywoman Sandy Galef is a co-sponsor. She represents portions of Putnam and Westchester counties. Her office found that according to Donate Life America, as of 2016, Putnam County ranked 27th and Westchester 52nd of New York's 62 counties in the percentage of residents registered as organ donors. Galef says education is key. Shields agrees.
I just think it's really important for everyone to stay educated on the cause and for people to continuously be reminded of how important it is in New York. You know, I don't want the law to just become permanent and then people forget about how important it is because there are always things that we can continue to do to increase the numbers.
Again, Carlucci.
So this is something we call mandated choice, that you're really mandated to make a decision. And you can skip the question, but you have to decide to skip the question. So we found that this is something that can dramatically increase the amount of people enrolling. Since it's been on the books, we've already seen a difference. We know there's other things that we need to do as well, but this is really the foundation of what I believe will turn things around in New York and save people's lives.
In addition to Lauren's Law, Cuomo signed an executive order directing the state health department to work with all state agencies to provide additional opportunities to become an organ donor, including through an updated Donate Life registry. The subject of organ donation was on the big screen at the Woodstock Film Festival that wrapped up October 15th. The documentary Bean tells the story of two young women who were a match on Tinder. One suffers from lupus and was in kidney failure. The other healthy, and as it turned out, after about a month of dating, a perfect kidney match. Lori Interlicchio says the choice was obvious no matter where the relationship was headed.
And I don't think that it was necessarily like I was head over heels in love with Alana. It was just like I'd never really thought about the idea that I could do this for a person before. And I remember having to tell my parents that too to get them to understand that, like, if this was one of the girls on my cheerleading team, like, I'd want to get tested or, like, you know. And when I went to the doctor's appointment, I told them, like, even if I'm not a match, I still want some more information about this to just see if, like, I could do this for someone else, because it just seems like this not crazy thing to do that could help someone a lot.
Alana Duran talks about how both matches have changed her life.
I guess now I'm just thinking, like, wow, so much has changed, and like, I don't have to do dialysis anymore, and like my heart function has improved like dramatically. So like that's great. And then like with our relationship wise, like we've only been like what stronger and like I don't know.
We just moved in together.
Yeah, we moved in together just this summer. I actually made the move from New York to Michigan to be with Lori, because I'm like, I'm not going to do the long distance thing anymore.
Interlicchio attends law school in Michigan. The two initially lived on Long Island, and the transplant surgery took place at Stony Brook University Hospital in February 2016. Both 27-year-old Duran and 24-year-old Interlicchio aim to provide information and education about what it means to become a donor. And the film's director is now on board with that mission as well. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
Norsk Titanium is the only company that manufactures FAA-approved structural titanium components for the aerospace industry using a patented rapid plasma 3D printing technique. Based in Norway, its global manufacturing facility is located in Plattsburgh. On Tuesday, New York Governor Cuomo visited the plant and officially dedicated the facility. WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley was there.
New York State and SUNY Polytechnic invested $125 million to bring the company to the state. In September 2016, NORSC announced its 67,500-square-foot Plattsburgh manufacturing plant had opened, and a month later, the first rapid plasma machines were installed. Nine are currently operating, four of which were installed last week. 11 more machines will be delivered by the end of the year. On Tuesday, Governor Andrew Cuomo made his first visit to the NORSC manufacturing plant since the rapid plasma machines were installed and cut a ribbon with officials to officially dedicate the plant.
Titanium is basically the strength of steel but the weight of aluminum. So it's always a better application if you could manufacture it in a way that would be cost competitive. And that's exactly what this company does. This is my first view with these machines. I don't understand it. I watch the machine operate. It's very, very impressive. How it does it, I have no idea, but it works.
The governor told a crowd of local officials and business people that NORSC has brought groundbreaking technology to the North Country, joining the state's growing clusters of innovation technology.
The potential applications are endless, and that's what Buffalo, now having Tesla and Panasonic making the best solar panels in the hemisphere, Rochester with new technologies on photonics. But here, it is about how do you make titanium parts faster and less expensive, and how adaptable can you be?
NORSC is producing parts for Boeing's 707 Dreamliner. It has also partnered with Spirit AeroSystems, which builds larger aerostructures for customers including Boeing, Airbus, Sikorsky, Northrop Grumman, and Rolls-Royce. Chief Technology Officer John Pilla says they will use NORSC components.
The cutting-edge technology being used here in New York is having an impact far beyond your state in our global aerospace economy and company. There's potentially thousands of parts on a variety of programs that are candidates for this advanced process. Achieving a 30% reduction in part costs and being able to get those parts more quickly while meeting all the quality requirements is a differentiator for Spirit. And we are evaluating all our titanium parts for this process.
NORSC Titanium CEO Warren Boley said the company looked at 48 states and decided to locate its U.S. headquarters and manufacturing plant in New York, in part due to the innovation mindset.
I like to say that we can make in an hour or a day in the 21st century what took a year in the 20th century. So this is a very, very big deal. Today, Governor Cuomo was making transformational investments in cutting-edge industries like 3D printing here in Plattsburgh, in drones, in data, in solar manufacturing and energy storage, and photonics that's spurring 21st century industrial revolution.
NORSC is currently leasing its manufacturing plant. A 100,000-square-foot production facility will be built at the former Clinton County Airport. Construction will begin next spring, and NORSC plans to occupy the new facility by late 2018 or early 2019. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
The Berkshire Education Task Force is sticking by a controversial recommendation it made back in July to create one countywide school district. WAMC's Berkshire's Bureau Chief J.D. Allen with the update.
Some of the concerns residents have over creating a single Berkshire County school district are whether cost savings will be applied to classroom instruction or to lower taxes, and whether programs like vocational schools and extracurriculars will improve. Members of the Berkshire Education Task Force that recommended the plan answered questions Tuesday night at the Northern Berkshire Community Coalition's October Forum. Adamstown Administrator Tony Mizuko says creating one countywide school district would pool resources so every student has the same access to academics, sports, and extracurriculars.
The goal of this is not just to say, let's regionalize and share all the schools in Berkshire County and take a dollar off everyone's tax rates. It's to maintain the quality of education we have and to improve that quality of education. It's not just about saving tax dollars. We're going to spend those dollars one way or another. We want to spend them effectively so that the dollars we're spending can get us a quality education so we don't fall behind the rest of the Commonwealth.
Adams Cheshire Regional Superintendent Robert Putnam says what's offered now to most students is extremely limited.
Right now, depending upon the community you live in, that can determine what opportunities you have.
North Adams Public Schools Superintendent Barbara Malkus says the task force's recommendation comes at a pivotal time.
Student enrollment continues to decline. Per pupil costs rise. Levy limits and tax ceilings are reached. And state and federal aid stagnates.
There has been a 22% decline in student enrollment countywide in the last decade.
Classes entering freshman year in many of our high schools are becoming so small that their chances of experiencing a course of studies that offers anything beyond the core are dwindling.
Malkus says at the same time, expectations for students in the competitive world of college admissions are rising. Last year, the Berkshire Education Task Force hosted forums to identify the region's needs. It identified five options ranging from the status quo to increased regionalization in North, Central, and South County before recommending what it called the best case scenario.
A single Berkshire County school district offers the best opportunity to provide the best education for the most students at a sustainable cost.
Taxpayers will have a more equitable and fiscally sustainable way of funding education and other municipal services.
Cynthia Brown, who's on the task force, was the Vice President of Academic Affairs at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts and served as the college's interim president. Brown says savings of up to $8.5 million a year could go toward reinvestment. Managing class size and enrollment declines could mean up to $27 million in savings. The task force predicts it will take 10 years to shift to a countywide school district, if that's what each municipality opts to adopt. Most municipalities are already in some kind of shared or regional school district.
We envision that these relationships will deepen and expand. We envision that over time, existing and new combinations of districts could grow and include more districts as more and more towns and other districts see the gains that can be made by coming together.
Residents in Williamstown and Lanesboro are scheduled to vote November 14th on whether to combine the four school committees that operate in the region. The state auditor's office released a study Wednesday calling for long-term modernization of regional school district structure statewide. Reporting from WAMC News' Berkshire Bureau at the Beacon Cinema, I'm J.D. Allen.
Clock the Commonwealth Club, Ellen Powell and Laura Weidman Powers on Resetting Silicon Valley. It begins at 1. Today at 2 on Vox Pop, it's Birds with Rich Guthrie. Mailers sent out by the Town Democratic Committee in the town of Niskayuna have raised the ire of the Republican town supervisor candidate. A closer look from our Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas.
The political mailing has jarred the Schenectady County town. Oversized postcards sent to local residents liken candidate for Niskayuna Town Supervisor Yasmin Syed to Alex Jones, the controversial proprietor of conspiracy website Infowars.com. An incredulous Syed issued a press release Monday in response, branding the cards hate mail.
I categorically reject everything that the Niskayuna Democratic Committee is asserting.
In addition to Jones, the flyers depict right-wing media personalities Rush Limbaugh and Steve Bannon with the caption, "The things we value most are under attack in Washington, and they are under attack in Niskayuna." The card says the Republicans' Facebook page features racist, anti-Semitic material and disparages Muslims.
My father is Muslim. My mother is of Jewish heritage. She just Christian.
The flip side of the mailer says SIAD and town board candidates Tom McGarry and Anthony Simone are too extreme for Niskayuna, while alleging the three Republicans shared 37 various news stories and promote Jones' belief that the Sandy Hook school shooting was a hoax and embrace Limbaugh's stance as a climate change denier.
I don't have admin rights to the Facebook page. I didn't personally share anything that they were asserting that I shared or by way of, you know, tacitly agreeing with any of those shock jock commentators. Don't listen to those people. Don't agree with what they have to say. Never have, never will.
In her statement posted in full at WAMC.org, Syed says as a political newcomer, she, quote, was told to expect that my opponents would engage in political mudslinging, but this is beyond the pale, even for career politicians.
And no matter how low they go, I'm going to stick to the issues.
Incumbent town supervisor Joe Landry could not be reached for comment. In addition to his post as Niskayuna supervisor, Landry serves as the Schenectady County Legislature attorney and is chairman of the County Democrats. The Niskayuna Democratic Committee did answer a request for comment by email, saying, quote, the mailer in question doesn't call the candidates racist, anti-Semitic, and anti-Muslim, as the GOP asserts. It says the Niskayuna Republican Committee shared posts from Breitbart News, a website which features racist, anti-Semitic, and anti-Muslim material and is run by Steve Bannon. The Niskayuna Republicans have shared a total of 37 posts from Alex Jones, Rush Limbaugh, and Breitbart News, the mouthpieces of the alt-right. We, as Democrats, denounce those outlets and the ideologies they espouse. By sharing these posts, the Niskayuna GOP is legitimizing these outlets and the message they deliver. Election Day is November 7th. Dave Lucas, WAMC News.
Support for WAMC comes from Albany Pro Musica, announcing across the vast eternal sky the music of Ole Yalo. With special guests, the American String Quartet, October 29th, Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, albanypromusica.org. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, announcing an open house tomorrow, 5:30 to 7:30. A plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery and skin care since 1996. 518-786-1700. The Alt, an alternative weekly providing the Capital Area with in-depth coverage of news, arts, culture, and community. Provoke, inform, inspire. TheAlt.com. 29 minutes after 12 o'clock, Midday Magazine, meteorologist Jason Caterina in today with the Midday Weather Summary.
High pressure will slide to our east today, but then linger nearby for the next several days, bringing us an extended, quiet period of weather. We may see a few extra clouds for portions of the western Adirondacks as some of the warmer air on the backside of the high pressure begins to move into the region. Then a disturbance to the north of the border will help to draw some more of that mild air north, and temperatures will warm a touch before taking a quick dip Friday in the wake of a weak front. And as high pressure begins to exert itself once again across the Ohio Valley and move in our direction. Now that area of high pressure will hang around over the weekend, keeping the weather calm and temperatures a little bit on the milder side of normal. Taking a look at potentially significant weather for today, the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma says there's no severe thunderstorm areas forecast. However, thunderstorm potential today and tonight will focus across portions of the Florida Peninsula and the adjacent southeast U.S. coast, as well as over parts of eastern Arizona, New Mexico, and far west Texas. A relatively low amplitude flow field aloft will persist across the U.S. today, though an approach of an eastern Pacific trough during the second half of the day will allow the flow to strengthen and become more cyclonic overnight for the Pacific Northwest and vicinity. Meanwhile, a fast-moving upper trough and associated surface cyclone is forecast across central Canada with time. The trailing cold front moves eastward across the north-central states and the upper Great Lakes region. However, lack of instability accompanying the front precludes that thunder risk. Potential for thunderstorms should remain confined to Florida and coastal southeast U.S. areas as weak upper trough encrosses the area and over portions of Arizona, New Mexico, and far west Texas in response to another area of weak upper cyclonic flow. Severe weather is not anticipated in either area. For those traveling across the Northeast today in New York City, it'll be sunny with a high near 70 degrees and a light breeze out of the southwest. In Boston, a high also near 70 degrees under sunny skies with a light westerly wind. And in Buffalo, sunny with a high near 65 degrees, a bit breezy out of the southwest, 10 to 15 miles an hour. The Albany, New York climate normals for today. Normal maximum temperature is 59 degrees with a record of 84 set in 2016. Normal minimum temperature is 39 degrees with a record of 22 set in 1978. Sunrise and sunset data for today, October the 18th, 2017. Sunrise at 7:12 a.m. and sunset at 6:08 p.m. Here's your latest regional forecast for the northern Adirondacks and central and northern Vermont, including Plattsburgh and Burlington, as well as the Champlain Valley and Lake George area, including Glens Falls. Some patchy fog around in the morning, otherwise sunny with a high in the mid-60s. For tonight, mostly clear, lows in the mid-40s. For the Connecticut Valley and a mid and lower Hudson Valley, including Chicopee, Hartford, Kingston, Poughkeepsie, and White Plains, as well as the remainder of interior southern New England, patchy fog in the morning, otherwise sunny and warmer with highs in the upper 60s. And for tonight, clear and cool with lows in the mid 40s. For the northern Catskills and Mohawk Valley west of Amsterdam, including Oneonta, Utica, as well as Schoharie, along with the southern Adirondacks, including Gloversville and Johnstown, patchy fog in the morning, sunny skies, highs in the mid-60s. Tonight, clear and cool with lows in the mid-40s. For the southern Catskills, including Middletown, the Taconics, and southern Berkshires, including Great Barrington, as well as the Litchfield Hills, including Torrington, patchy fog in the morning, sunny and warmer, highs in the mid-60s. Tonight, clear and cool with lows in the mid-40s. For the Greater Capital District, including Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, as well as the Saratoga area east to southern Vermont and the Berkshires north of I-90, patchy fog in the morning, sunny and warmer with highs in the upper 60s, clear and cool tonight with lows in the mid-40s. Your extended forecast region-wide for Thursday, highs in the 60s to near 70 under sunny skies. Sunny Friday and Saturday, highs in the upper 50s to low 60s Friday. The 60s to near 70 on Saturday. Mostly sunny Sunday, highs in the mid-60s to mid-70s. Partly sunny with a chance of showers on Monday with highs in the mid-60s to low 70s. And showers likely Tuesday with highs in the low 60s to near 70 degrees. For WAMC, I'm meteorologist Jason Caterina.
Support for WAMC comes from Adelphi University's Hudson Valley Center, offering flexible social work graduate degrees, including a part-time Master of Social Work program, combining on-campus and online coursework, adelphi.edu/MSM. The Olana Partnership presenting Overlook. Terry Cita Fernandez confronts Frederick Church at Olana. A collaboration with Olana State Historic Site and Colegion Patricia Phelps de Cisneros through November the 5th, Olana.org. Amtrak, fall foliage trips aboard the Adirondack's Great Dome Car. Windows on all sides and overhead. Albany to Montreal stops throughout New York's North Country. Amtrak.com for reservations.
On this week's 51%, a program allows some women to keep their babies in prison.
I think we're the only maximum security prison with baby gates.
There's an online course about human trafficking, and a musician explores her Finnish past. I'm Allison Dunn, and it's coming up this week on 51%. Join us Thursday night at 8 and Wednesday at 3 right here on WAMC Northeast Public Radio.
This is a WAMC News Update. I'm Brian Shields. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he urged the firing of former FBI Director James Comey because of how Comey handled the Hillary Clinton email investigation. Sessions told a Senate panel today he gave President Trump his opinion on Comey at the president's request. Sessions would not say whether he also discussed with Trump's Comey involvement in the Russian investigation. The newest member of New York's highest court has been sworn in. Paul Feinman is the first openly gay person to serve on the Court of Appeals. A lower court judge for more than 20 years, Feinman fills the vacancy created by the death of former Judge Sheila Abdus Salam last year. Police have made an arrest in the fatal shooting of a man outside a Pittsfield bar nearly 2 years ago. James Cromartie is being held without bail after pleading not guilty at his arraignment in the January 2016 shooting death of James Dominguez III. The investigation stalled until the summer when police received two anonymous tips that indicated the 31-year-old of Pittsfield was the shooter. Support for WAMC comes from Berkshire Bank, providing banking, insurance, and wealth management. Over 99 locations in New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Berkshire Bank. Life is exciting. Let us help. BerkshireBank.com.
This is Ian Pickus for WAMC News. In the fast-paced political wars of the Trump era, it's easy to forget the hyper-partisanship that marked the past two administrations. Two veterans of the White House will discuss the current political landscape at 7 p.m. at Hamilton College in Clinton, New York. Former George W. Bush advisor Karl Rove and Barack Obama advisor David Axelrod will speak in what the college calls an attempt at respectful dialogue. And moderating the discussion is Susan Page, USA Today's Washington bureau chief, who joins us now for a preview. Susan, what are you expecting to hear?
You know, I expect us to have a energetic but respectful conversation about whether our political situation, how our political situation today compares with the elections that these two guys helped run for previous presidents, and what, if anything, we can do about getting back to a politics where there is a greater effort and greater possibility of finding common ground to address some of the big problems the country faces.
We've certainly seen the fringes of each side become more prominent in the parties in the last year or so. So how do you think we got to where we are today?
You know, we should remember that politics has always been a contact sport in America, that we've had lots of tough campaigns before. But I think there have been a couple developments that have given a new edge to our politics that have concerned a lot of Americans. One of it is that we seem to be increasingly just divided into camps with different points of view, and we seem to have lost our ability to talk to one another or maybe to hear what the other side is saying. We see this in polling and in every other way that there just seems to be a loss of the center, a loss of an ability to say, I may disagree, you may be a Republican or Democrat and I'm on the other side, but I can hear what you're saying. I know, I believe that we both want what's best for the country. How can we work together? That is not a conversation you hear as much in Washington and across the country as I think we want to hear as Americans. I think a lot of Americans want to get back to a politics that is a little less shrill, a little less harsh, and much more respectful.
Do you think that President Trump is trying to decide where he is on that very issue? Because, you know, obviously we've seen a lot of inertia with the Republican agenda so far. And then he, you know, said on Twitter that he had reached some sort of deal with Chuck and Nancy, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. So do you think that his instincts toward quote-unquote deal-making might lead him in that direction at some point?
You know, it's possible, this is of some concern to his fellow Republicans on Capitol Hill when he started talking in friendlier terms about the Democratic leaders than he was talking about the Republican leaders like Speaker Paul Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. So I think he would like, you know, his history is not very ideological. He hasn't even always been a Republican. So he may have an instinct that enables him to envision making a deal with Democrats, but he is also so polarizing in terms of Democrats, you know, especially his attacks on President Obama and his agenda, that he's working, and it seems to me in some ways at cross purposes with himself. If he wants to reach a deal, it seems to me he needs to reach out to Democrats in a more consistent way. Now maybe he'll do that, but the signs are really mixed, and we've seen President Trump, who of course surprised many of us, and I would put myself in that category, by managing to win the election. We've seen him really double down on holding that base of support that he won in the election. He has done less than previous modern presidents in terms of trying to reach out to voters who did not vote for him last November.
Let's talk about the Democrats then in that same equation. There seems to be some disagreement, at least in the members of Congress we talk to here at WAMC, over whether it's worth it politically to compromise with the president on something they might want to get, say infrastructure, while also keeping an eye on 2018 and 2020 because he's so deeply unpopular on the left.
You know, Ian, that's exactly right. We talk about divisions in the GOP. Well, Democrats are divided on many fronts, and including the question of how far do you go to strike a deal with President Trump. If Democrats think they have some possibility of winning control of the House next year. That would be a big victory for them, really change the landscape here in Washington. And there's a division among Democrats within the Democratic Party about to what degree are you helping President Trump if you reach a deal with him on, say, immigration or infrastructure? To what degree do you make compromises with the president to get things done that you told your constituents you were going to support? And this is not a question that's been, I think, resolved in the Democratic Party.
You're the Washington bureau chief for the USA Today Network, and in this administration, it seems news coverage is kind of the daily discussion. What kind of pressures have you felt in your position, if any, since the Trump administration started?
You know, this is the sixth president I've covered as a reporter or as the Washington bureau chief, and it's been different from the previous five. The pace is much faster. The ability to learn exactly what the president is thinking is much greater because he's on Twitter early in the morning and late at night. It gives you real insight into what he's thinking, and there's just also a kind of fierceness to the debate now. And, you know, in a way that's, of course, driven that people are very curious. So we've seen that we've gotten a lot of readers who are very interested in what's going on in Washington. But it's, you know, it's also made coverage more difficult. It means that we're constantly having to make decisions on what to cover. There is too much news for us to cover with our staff, so we have to make decisions both on what is most provocative, because some of that we want to cover, but also what's going to have the long term, what are going to have the greatest long term consequences. So, for instance, you look at something like North Korea's nuclear program or the issue of climate change. We want to continue to cover those issues even while we're focused as well on the president's latest tweet.
What are you hoping to learn about Karl Rove and David Axelrod, who are, two kind of titans of American political strategizing on this event?
You know, there are no two people, except for the presidents themselves, who had more to do with electing first George W. Bush and then Barack Obama than did Karl Rove and David Axelrod. So they have a pretty privileged position to look at how things are going. I'd like to ask them whether they think there are things they did that contributed to some of the difficulties we see in American politics today. And I also want us to discuss what comes next. What could they do? What could voters do? What could the news media do to get us back to a situation where our political system works better?
Well, Susan Page will moderate a discussion between Karl Rove and David Axelrod at Hamilton College in Clinton, New York. She's USA Today's Washington bureau chief. Safe travels, Susan, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ian.
O'clock, it's the Commonwealth Club, resetting Silicon Valley with Ellen Pao and Laura Weidman Powers. That's at 1. Today at 2 on Vox Pop Birds with Rich Guthrie. The State Department says Washington is working to calm the conflict between the Iraqi government and authorities in the autonomous Kurdish region in the north. Iraqi forces have taken control of oil fields near the disputed city of Kirkuk, which they seized from the Kurds on Monday. They have been reimposing their authority with Kurdish forces reported to have returned to positions in northern Iraq that they held in 2014. The BBC's Orla Guerin reports.
Well, we're driving along a deserted road into the city of Kirkuk. We were here as thousands of civilians were streaming out after the takeover by Iraqi forces. We're now coming back into the city to gauge the mood. We had to get permission from the Iraqis to get this far, and we have a military escort from Shia militia units allied with the government leading the way. Well, we're now heading towards the center of Kirkuk. There's a little bit more traffic now, and it seems like every few meters almost there's an Iraqi military vehicle. Another one there on my right, four or five troops with balaclavas and the Iraqi flag at the back of the vehicle. This is very clearly now Iraqi territory. There's no sign of all the Kurdish flags that have been flying here. The Kurds took control of the city in 2014. At that stage, the Iraqis fled as IS advanced. but the clock has now been turned back. Passing a lot of closed houses, the gates locked, and closed up shops all along the street on my left.
The people who left, they are fading from everything, let's say. They are fading about themselves, but they will come back, all of them. They will come back because this is their cities.
At a local market, we met Mustafa Imad from the Turkman community. He said this mixed city belongs to all, and the Kurds should come home.
They are Iraqis. It's not about he is Kurdish, he is Turkmenish, he is Shia, he is Sunni. This is his city.
But do you think there may be some tension, some division now because of what happened, that some people, when they come back, will be afraid?
Of course, they are. But they will come back, all of them.
But so far, most have not. The Kurdish neighborhood, a short distance away, was a ghost town. One of the few people on the streets was a young Peshmerga fighter, Andy Saeed Saleh. He was on the front line when the Iraqis advanced.
There was a hard fight because we have small weapon, and they have a tank and the hammers and the big weapon, and the fight is not equal.
That fight was triggered by last month's independence referendum. Andy voted yes. Now he wishes he hadn't.
I voted 2 years to referendum, but if I thought this is gonna be happen, I never voted. Because we don't need Iraq's army to come here. We need our governor, Kurdish governor. I am not Iraqi, I am Kurdish.
How does it feel to lose Kirkuk? Is it very painful?
I feel no good. I'm so sad. Yesterday I cried. I cried because they sell my city to the Iraqi.
And the Kurds have lost more than Kirkuk. Under pressure from Baghdad, the Peshmerga have withdrawn from other disputed areas. The referendum now looks like a costly miscalculation.
The BBC's Orla Guerin. Support for WAMC comes from Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, presenting an evening with Bruce Hornsby, playing his songs The Way It Is, Mandolin Rain, and more from his diverse career. Saturday, 8 p.m., troymusichall.org. Baba Louie's Pizza, Great Barrington and Hudson, New York. Natural wood-fired pizzas, salads, vegan soups, sandwiches, pasta dishes, and gluten-free options. BabaLouie'sPizza.com. Homebrew Emporium, New Rochelle in North Greenbush, New York. West Boylston in Boston, Massachusetts. Providing beer and wine-making equipment and supplies from beginners to professionals. BeerBrew.com. Handmade and More, New Paltz, a boutique that supports creative communities and cultures from America and around the world, with a showcase for their jewelry, gifts in women's fashion, Handmade and More on Facebook. Mary Irish with Wall Street.
During midday trading, the Dow is up 147 points to 23,144. The Standard & Poor's 500 index is up 2 points to 2,561. And the NASDAQ composite is up 4 points to 6,627. The breadth of the market is even, with about the same number of advancing issues as decliners, and the yield on the 10-year Treasury bond is 2.3%. Some of the most active stocks on the big board today include AT&T, down 63 cents to $35.60. IBM is up 13.08 to $159.62, and General Electric is down 6 cents to $23.13. In the overseas markets last night, London's FTSE 100 closed slightly higher. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng Index rose a fraction. From Morgan Stanley Wealth Management in Niskayuna, New York, this is Mary Irish bringing you the Wall Street Update for WAMC.
Support for WAMC and Stardate comes from Paul Smith's College, the College of the Adirondacks, offering degrees in entrepreneurial business, environmental science, culinary arts, hospitality, recreation, and many more, and experiential education with hands-on academics, paulsmiths.edu. North Shire Bookstore presenting Jeff Goodell, author of The Water Will Come, Rising Seas, Sinking Cities, and the Remaking of the Civilized World, Thursday, October 26th, 6 p.m., Saratoga Springs, New York, NorthShire.com for information. The 9th Annual Woodstock Invitational Luthiers Showcase, handmade acoustic guitars and stringed instruments, concerts, clinics, and more. October 27th through the 29th at the Bearsville Theater and Utopia Soundstage. WoodstockInvitational.com.
Stardate, October 18th. The planet Uranus is putting in its best appearance of the year this week. It rises at sunset and remains in the sky all night. It's also closest to us for the year at less than 1.8 billion miles, so it shines brightest. In fact, under especially dark skies, for those with very good vision, it's barely visible to the unaided eye. Most of us, though, need binoculars to find it. Uranus is one of the giants of the solar system. Only Jupiter and Saturn are bigger. But Uranus may be put together differently from its larger siblings. Jupiter and Saturn are balls of hydrogen and helium wrapped around solid cores. Uranus probably has a solid core too, but it has a lot less hydrogen and helium. All of those elements that it does have are contained in an atmosphere that's perhaps 3,000 miles thick, about one-fifth of the distance down from the tops of the planet's clouds. Below that may be a liquid or partially frozen mixture of water, methane, and rocky minerals. Unlike the boundary between the oceans and air here on Earth, though, there probably isn't a sharp boundary between the layers of Uranus. The pressure is so great that the liquid and gas merge in a slushy transition zone. Uranus climbs into view in the southeast an hour or two after sunset, near the eastern edge of the constellation Pisces. Through binoculars, it looks like a faint blue-green star, a giant world far from the sun. We'll have more about Uranus tomorrow. Our web address is stardate.org. For the University of Texas at Austin, McDonald Observatory, I'm Sandy Wood.
Support for Stardate comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, helping to bring nature closer with Eagle Optics, Vortex, Swarovski and Zeiss binoculars and spotting scopes, 518-226-0071. Saratoga County EOC serving low-income children and families through the Head Start program, helping to develop skills in reading, language, math, and socialization in preparation for kindergarten. SaratogaEOC.org for details. Center for Better Hearing in Glens Falls, New York, Dr. Susan Boshup and Kara Bedore, providing audiological and hearing health care services in a patient-focused environment, hearingbest.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. Our Wednesday commentator, Dr. Herb London, now on U.S. military readiness.
Toxin is in the air. The North Korean representative to the UN said President Trump's recent speech was tantamount to a declaration of war. While this kind of verbal saber-rattling has occurred in the past, it is worth asking whether U.S. forces have the technological superiority to thwart any potential foe and the nuclear superiority to deter a first strike. While the U.S. still enjoys some technological advantages over potential adversaries, that advantage is declining at a rapid rate. An American Enterprise Institute study noted that the diffusion of advanced military technology and the means to manufacture it have accelerated. Capabilities in which the United States once enjoyed a monopoly, precision munitions and unmanned systems, have now proliferated to virtually all U.S. adversaries in short order. Nations such as China and Russia have made concerted efforts to outpace and counter the military technological advancements of the United States, end quote. While the AEI study is not dispositive, and several military officials have criticized the conclusion, no one disputes the fact that U.S. superiority is being challenged. Similarly, the once dominant nuclear arsenal of the U.S. is in descent. At the 2009 New START Treaty meeting, President Barack Obama traded away U.S. nuclear superiority in what was a high-risk experiment in unilateral disarmament. This decision was in keeping with his adolescent dream of a world without nuclear weapons. However, President Obama made his decision without the consent of Congress or any consultation with the American people. Since the 2009 START Treaty, Russia has tested several new mobile ICBMs, such as the SS-25 and the RS-26, in violation of the treaty. But the Obama administration chose to ignore the violations. Moreover, the Chinese buildup of its theater strategic rocket force is a matter of concern, but the magnitude of the problem is concealed by the secrecy of their stockpiling. Added to this equation is the growing nuclear arsenal of North Korea and Iran, both basically allied in targeting the U.S. with its fledgling nuclear weapons. Despite the fact military assessments invariably refer to the strength of U.S. armed forces, training budgets are at an alarmingly low level. One plausible explanation for the naval accidents in Asia is congestion in the Straits of Malacca and the lack of adequate training for naval officers in the region. Moreover, conventional war may be a condition of the past. It is conceivable that cyber warfare is in our future, which could lead to a breakdown of the American economy. The national security strategy for the United States has a range of capabilities, including being militarily equipped to fight a two-front war. But the alliance between China and Russia militates against this strategic position. According to U.S. National Intelligence Council, Asia will have surpassed North America and Europe combined in terms of global power based upon GDP, population size, military spending, and technological investment, end quote. That statement alone should alarm Americans. Our capabilities are sliding while potential adversaries are ascending. President Trump said as much and seemingly understands this issue. Yet all the bluster about military affairs cannot undo the damage of a previous administration devoted to stasis or diminishing U.S. capability. An increased defense budget may be necessary, but it will be years before U.S. gains unequivocal superiority on the military front it once had. There isn't any substitution for a hard-headed assessment of our assets based on facts as they are, not as we would like them to be. So far, we are still captivated by illusions, and these illusions have created a precarious military profile for a world in disarray.
Dr. Herb London is president of the London Center for Policy Research and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. The views expressed by our commentators are solely those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the views of WAMC or its management. The comment line is open, 800-695-9170. The Dow up 144, S&P up 3, NASDAQ up 10. The weather forecast, a sunny afternoon, mid-60s to near 70, clear and cool tonight, upper 30s to mid-40s. Some morning fog tomorrow, otherwise a sunny day, mid-60s to lower 70s. Support for WAMC comes from the Turning Stone Resort, offering accommodations, dining, spa treatments, golf courses, and a variety of live entertainment, turningstone.com. The office of Dr. Vivian Letizia Woodstock, orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry, serving Woodstock in the Hudson Valley since 1995, woodstockdentist.com. Bard College Master of Arts and Teaching Program, offering full and part-time teachers and a master's degree with teacher certification. Now accepting applications. Teaching what matters, bard.edu/MAT/NY. Thank you for joining us today on WAMC's Midday Magazine. Our engineer, Liz Hill. I'm Brian Shields. The Commonwealth Club next.